Hello, and welcome to episode 167 of the Weekly Song Podcast. If you've never joined us before, this is the podcast where myself, Declan Kitchener, and my co-host, Roger Heathers, say hello, Roger.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Declan.
Hello. Each write a song and then bring it to the podcast and then have a listen on air, discuss it and sort of what went into writing it, what we think about it, anything interesting that we can draw from the songs. Draw from them into the songwriting discussion ether. This is a thing, apparently. It is much less sinister than it sounds. Don't worry. So how did you find the final week of writing, Roger?
I mean, if we're being honest, I ran out of steam a little bit because I knew it was like, okay, it's like the last mile, you know what I mean? So it was one of those ones where it was kind of like a bit of a pulling teeth moment, but I think the results are good. So yeah, again, more positive than it sounds, but how about you?
It was an interesting one. It's always that sort of thing where you are trying to work out what ideas you have and haven't used. And I think in this circumstance with my one, I think I've ended up using quite a few of my regular tricks, but hopefully it's created something interesting. I'm not sure. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. First off, we shall be looking at Roger's song. So, Roger, what is your song? What is it called? How does it go?
It is called A Fool's Bet. And I named this song shortly after demoing it. Sometimes that happens. And it goes like this. One, two, three.
Right back at the start, leave my lonely world to sleep, raise it to the ground, mine till it's empty all around, a man without a sound stands free. It might be a fool's bet, or maybe your last success. You're dumb, but you're not dead yet to me. Take it all to bed, no doubt you'll rain it on my head. Saving all my love to be.
So that was A Fool's Bet, the seventh song from Roger this season, and it would be a fool's bet to bet against Roger and his songwriting. That was really quite nice and quite charming.
Oh, too kind.
So this one's in triple meter. Like, have we done triple meter much this season?
First time. And like you were saying in the beginning, it's like that thing of, what haven't I done yet? And there was a very conscious choice of like, well, I haven't written in triple meter yet, so ten ticker ticker ten ticker ticker. You know, just let's try it.
Out of ideas, tang tuka tuka tang tuka tuka,
and proceed. Yes. Pretty much. It really, I mean, we joke, but it pretty much was that. See what comes out of that.
It gives it that sort of very nice sort of swaying sort of what's the word I'm looking for? There's a sort of persistent rhythm for it. There's a bit of a gentle momentum.
Lilt, waltz, flow.
These are all good words.
There is a word. I can't think of the word either. But thanks, yeah. I think it helps when you... We said this a few times, but you start with a rhythm or a feel, and then that kind of informs the general vibe of the song. And with that triple meter sort of 6-8 thing, you have a lot... You have a bit more room, don't you, to play with words and with chords and things like that.
Yeah, I tend to find a lot of my 4-4 ones, which is most of my songs, tend to like need quite short sentences to sort of fill the gaps just because of the way I sing. Whereas like having something like that where it encourages melodies to flow over it, like you do end up with a different kind of lyric on top of it, which I think is interesting. It's also kind of a very interesting set of chords. It feels very classic singer-songwritery. Like, what's going on there?
Fifths.
Yes. I thought I recognised them from somewhere.
just cycling through the fifths. So basically, it's in E minor, and you're going E minor, A, D, G, C, and then a little bit of a shift here, F sharp major, B major, which obviously is your fifth to come back to the E minor. So it's just circling around those, and it is very classic singer-songwriter, and one of those chord progressions where I was like, should I come up with something else? Is this a bit played out? But it worked, so I kind of lent into it.
The thing with using a classic chord sequence like that is that it forces you to think of your melodies a bit more, doesn't it? Like, I know in the past that you and I tend to sort of, if we're writing our own chord sequences, like, you can sort of hear where the melody is in the chords. Whereas, like, if you've got like a classic set of chords like the fifths or like a 12 bar blues or something like that, you do have to think very carefully about constructing your melodies in such a way that they are going to be uniquely identifiable.
That's true, actually. And to jump ahead a little bit, in the bridge of this song, I really did think about the melodies and about the rhythm, because what you want to do, which works and is kind of natural to do with this type of song, is just go za da 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 lum pum pum pa dum da da da, which I do all the time. But to kind of like consciously try and change that up in the bridge, I go za da 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 la da 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 da, and just do the eighth notes in there, or 16th perhaps, just to kind of like make it a little bit different, because otherwise it's a nice flow, but it can be a little repetitive.
Well, I mean, one of the tools you've got to change that up with is kind of obviously the dynamics. And we're obviously looking at a single acoustic guitar and vocal demo of this one. But then when you get to what I think is the chorus, like it does just sort of drop back out to being quiet again, like or much lower dynamics than the verses surrounding it. Like, was that something that developed from the words, or was that just more of a constructional thing with the music?
Constructional thing with the music, because I came up with a verse which I really liked, because the vocal melody was part of the opening guitar part, the da, 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 da. So you're playing the chords, but you're also doing some stuff with the fingers where you're playing the vocal melody, what will become the vocal melody. So I thought, I've got a good verse vocal melody here, and then I kind of came up with a chorus too, which kind of landed it in a different place on the bar lyrically. But they had the same chords. So I was thinking, okay, what can I do here? And I think the only real thing I could do was change the dynamic so the verses were loud and the choruses are much more intimate and quiet.
It's kind of like the inverse of the Nirvana way of doing things. Like they always like the quiet verses and like the super loud choruses. You are reverse Nirvana.
Oh my God, I just came up with a whole new genre. I'll call it grunge. No, shit.
Someone's already taken that one, Roger. Don't be silly. Don't be silly. But how far into like the process of writing this one did you start thinking about the words? Or was that because, again, we know that you tend to write them more or less at the same time. Was that the case for this one?
Funnily enough, the words actually came first for this one. one of those, it's like the cliche of songwriting. I was falling asleep and I had a song come in my head and I pulled my phone and I got my voice demos out and I just recorded these words. It might be a fool's bet or maybe your last success. And I had the melody too. So I came up with the chords like that evening. And but just, you know, oh, that's a cool chord progression sort of thing. And then when I came up with that lyric, I was like, might be a fool's bet or maybe your last success. I was like, that's something. Half asleep, recorded it into my phone. And then just went to bed. And then kind of like a couple of days later, just tried to finish that off. And as we've said before, quite often you go, that's a cool lyric, but I don't know what it means. I mean, it sounds like it means something. But that doesn't equate to it actually meaning anything.
Well, I mean, like, the audience is never going to know, are they?
No, it's like that Elliot Smith thing of, like, a good song, in his opinion, is, like, should be half of a conversation where you don't get all the facts. And I think a lot of the times the listener will just fill in their own meaning.
It's quite a strong sort of lyric to start with. It gives you that imagery, which... ended up being sort of part of the title and everything, which you said did that not jump out to you sort of beforehand as the title, because you said you only named this after the fact?
It's weird actually, because usually when you come up with a good chorus, what you feel is a good chorus lyric, you go, that's obviously the title. But for some reason, because the lyrics were so they took so long to write, I was like, okay, well, that's a line, what's the song about? And by the time I got to demo it, because I mean it's been a bit of a tight schedule to actually get the writing and demoing done this past week. So it was a case of like, I've done this before with songs. I mean, do you ever do this where I just listen to it at the end? I was like, okay, the song's finished, just demoed. A fool's bet, I think, is the best line that sounds like a title. So I'll go for that.
I tend to have that moment just after I've written them down, everything down, sort of sung it through once. If it's obvious, it jumps out to me there and then. I don't know that I have had no idea of what to call the song. I've been unhappy with song titles, but I've never known not what to call it, at least not that I can remember, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. I think, to be honest with you, I think I would have come up with the title sooner. It's just a case of like, just time. It's like, for example, I was saying to you before we jumped on, like, yeah, I finished work today. I was like, okay, I've got a couple of hours in which to demo and have dinner. So I'll just put down the demo. I was thinking, oh, yeah. And then you get to the MP3 bit and you go, okay, what file name? What do I call it? And you're like, oh, let me have a look at the lyrics. So, but it's rare. It's rare. Usually, you know, with a chorus, you kind of go, I don't know, like with a song like I wrote, you know, You Had Your Chance, like that's obviously the title because it says it so many times, you know.
And it's also like the key moment where like the dynamic shift to go into the big poppy chorus and everything. But how did you kind of expound on that sort of initial idea lyrically? So what else did you sort of draw in or sort of draw out of the idea?
This one's the most like a sort of little poem of all the songs I've written. I'm just going to pull up the lyrics actually, just so I have them to reference. But yeah, it's just like, it's not like a narrative. It's not like it's really saying anything particular. I guess it's just a case of I moved out of my previous place. And so there's been a lot of moving and obviously reevaluating sort of where I am in my life. And, you know, I think a change of where you live can kind of like pull up a lot of things, like, you know, restart, fresh start, you know, turning over a new leaf, what you want that to feel like and all that kind of thing.
Sort of end up finding yourself in a very transitional kind of headspace.
Yeah. And it's hard not to have that come out in your lyrics. I mean, I know when you've moved, you've often had that come out in your words, haven't you?
The lyrics tend to get about 10% more angsty. Yes, this is, this is correct.
I mean, it's like we said before earlier, like you can't help but have these things come out in some way, some form. And it was not like I consciously went, I'm going to write a moving house song. It's just how it happened. So, I mean, you know, it's quite self-explanatory, really. In the first verse, take my life apart, work till it's right back at the start, leave my lonely world to sleep. And at that point, that leave my lonely world to sleep line, I was like, this should be about trying to leave some stuff behind and start with a completely blank slate. Like anything that was kind of self-isolating, try and leave behind, try and find some other ones that are, take it all to bed. No doubt you'll rain it on my head. saving all my love to please someone I'll become, who knows all the ways to build upon, who stands upon their own two feet. So just kind of, I don't know, leaving behind old stuff and trying to become a better version of yourself, I guess, is kind of the long and the short of it.
I mean, it's a good theme to write a song about. It's a theme we've both written many songs about.
Indeed. We've both written a lot of songs about that.
We have written many songs about our neuroses for you. It's not done us any good.
That's the thing. They say, oh, songwriting is like therapy. But therapy works.
I like that.
But I mean, that's the thing. Like, I think I don't know anyone who writes songs that don't reflect consciously or unconsciously something they're going through or something they're trying to work through or something like that. I think when I was younger, I used to be a bit more vague and abstract, and I was kind of like one of those lyrics don't matter type of people. But I think I've kind of like really grown to enjoy them as I've gotten older.
As we've become more distinguished and experienced songwriters, you learn to appreciate the subtle art of the lyric.
It
is kind of a weird thing trying to write a good set of words that have to sound good to a good set of music and also have them be good in and of themselves and have like their own meaning. It's definitely a skill, and I think it's a skill that you're more skilled at than I am, that as evidenced by the fact that I use skill twice close to each other in that sentence, and I cannot construct the current sentence I'm saying. Me fail English, that's impossible.
Impossible. Well, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you did good, lad. Your words sound nice, and they sound like they've got meaning and everything, and you've drawn them together quite well, and they paint a pretty picture of the emotional state of your mind.
Well, thank you. I mean, yeah, it's I appreciate that. I mean, that's the thing. They sound like they have meaning. I think there are nuggets. There are little lines here and there where I go, I like that line. That line's a good one. But sometimes you just fill in the gaps. And I think, not to make this into a, you know, compliment contest or anything, but one thing you do lyrically which I like is you deliver what you're saying really well. Like, I get it, I get what your songs are about, whereas sometimes mine could be a little bit poetry like which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but I wish I had more of that.
Say, if you think poetry is bad, boy do the poets have a word for you.
Well, what do they call me?
They've written it in verse, they haven't got just the one word, you know.
Oh my God. Remind me never to open a poetry book. Okay, right. Anyway, but I'm waffling about this song. So the last thing I'll say is that because the verse and the chorus are the same chords, but slightly different rhythms, I had the bright idea to say in the final bit of the song, the outro or what have you, it should be the chord progression, obviously, but with the verse and the chorus going at the same time. But it didn't really work in execution because although they start at different points in the bar, they kind of follow the same melody. So it's just the same melody with this kind of confused two sets of lyrics going on, which I don't think really works.
It was an interesting experience listening to that. I do think it works, but I also think you can put some more structure in there. But like, it's a good idea, and it's a difficult one to pull off. Like, you need to construct both sections very carefully to sort of make that work. But I do like that there. I like the fact this other voice comes in, you go like, hang on, what's going on here? So you left the track on or something.
I think ideally, like, if I had another week to just rewrite the song, I'd make it so, I keep all the words and everything, but I'd make it so the chorus goes up to sing a fifth above where I'm currently singing and like do a slightly different rhythmic thing. Cause then when it comes time to bring them together, you've got the verse doing a low thing, and then the counterpoint. Exactly. Yeah. Then they're kind of doing different stuff.
That's interesting. So talking of potentially working on the song in future, does this have a sort of future for yourself? Are you sort of thinking about how you might produce this up or work further on it?
I mean, I haven't had any like concrete thoughts. I mean, I think it's got potential. But I mean, you know, we were talking last week, I think, about, you know, next time we make an album, a full length album, we're probably going to draw from demos from various things, various times we've written. And this may be one that we do together, maybe one I do by myself, but I don't really have any ideas for it.
Well, I mean, this is going to work better for the visual people watching the podcast rather than the audio people. But if you could just turn around to your left.
Robert. Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Look, this is my pride and joy. This is my new cello that my stepsister brought down and bequeathed me. I love it. So this is going to be on the next Newcombs album.
Yes, specifically, may I venture that it might go well but if you can sort of learn all the instruments of a string quartet and then maybe do something with this in that regard.
Not a bad idea. Funnily enough, cello is much easier to play than violin. Violin's very fiddly. I tried to play... I'm a poet and I didn't even realize it.
Oh, that's a title. I think.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. I mean, yeah, cello on it, Declan on it, you know, bingo. That's a hit.
It's a hit guaranteed. We'll get it in the charts by Sunday.
Ideal. Okay, so that was my song that we just listened to, obviously. And now we are going to move on to Declan's song. So, by the way, these are the 7 songs. This is the end of writing for this season. Not the end of the season, but the end of writing. So, Declan, what are you bringing to the table for your 7th song? What's it called? And I never know what the next question after that bit's going to be. What's it called?
So what I'm bringing to the table is a guitar and my voice. The song is called Draw Me Near, and it goes like this.
You know, I sent so many gentle words, and some of them were even heard, but it's just not enough. All the different thoughts I talk, and still I haven't got it right. I haven't done enough. Boy, it leaves me wrong. Just see me, just hear me. So draw me near. Okay, I've seen a glimpse into your life. I've met you halfway in the light, but it's just not enough. There's not much farther I can throw. Pull me in or let me go, but make a choice. Find your voice. Just say me, just hear me, belay me, I'm standing here, so draw me near. Is this all you wanted from this? You might have told me so. Consider this finished. You could have let me know. Let me know. Just say me. Just hear me.
Okay, so that was Declan's 7th song, Draw Me Near. Fantastic. Very kind of subdued for you. Almost kind of like following on from last week's song in that sort of more acoustic, very much singer-songwriter. I don't really hear drums behind this particularly. Just so much about this I like. The lyrics are great. Not a lot going on non-diatonically in the bridge, but the bridge is my favorite part. Anyway, I'm going to stop rambling, but yeah, I love it. How did it all start?
It started on a Sunday. Back to writing on Sundays. I'm terrible at scheduling.
Hey, at least you didn't do it on a Monday. I mean, no. Wrong Monday. You know what I'm saying?
The wrong Monday. Yeah, if I'd done it the previous Monday, you'd be laughing. So this one sort of, again, it's that end of the season feeling where it's thinking like, what do I do? I've used all my tricks. I know, I'll put all my tricks together.
Yeah.
So this one just started with that sort of good, that sort of very clunky kind of feel to it. And that sort of has a bit of movement implied in it, even if it is just a straightforward one. So starting on an A, moving down towards 4 and 5, which in this case would be D and E, is probably a good idea. So it's moves in the verses from A to G sharp diminished, S chords, to a G, to a D over F sharp, to a D over E. Getting a bit Carole King here for a second.
Yes.
And then a D with the bass running D, E, F sharp, D, and then to an A. So it's a bit of a round loop.
Yeah. And then in the beginning there, you got like a bit of chromatic movement in the bass. So you're kind of moving down the low E string, I suppose, are you?
Yes, quite correct. Yeah. In fact, I should have tried putting this song in drop D.
Oh, yeah?
Because then you could have got that extended range on the lowest D.
Yes.
That's as low as that part goes.
Well, this is the thing. This is like what I was saying with mine. Like, if you had another week, these are the things that occur to you after you finish the demo. You go, oh, right, well, there's a better way of doing that. Yeah.
Oh, that's going to annoy me now.
Well, we'll have to produce it, or you'll have to produce it. And, you know, now you know what to do.
Now I know what to do. So that was kind of that. That's a nice thing to build a verse around. And then I realized, oh, wait a minute, the way I've constructed the melody, I can't actually like repeat the first syllable of a line, because you'll notice it's something like do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do, and then goes on to that bit. But it doesn't do that first do-do again, because you haven't got the space to do it. So you're just, it's a 1-2-2, as it were.
So how did you get around that? What was the...
I didn't.
Oh, I see. But I think that works great. One of the things I love about the song generally, particularly in the verses, is it's very melodic, and it's very poppy melodically, I think, but it goes places you don't expect. Like, it kind of goes from one chord to another, and you expect it to stay there for a bar or two, and actually it kind of rises up and changes the chords and melody, and it just kind of snakes around, you know?
It's a slippery snake, this song, isn't it?
Snaky journey, if you will.
Yes, that's a callback and a half. So
episode 4, I believe.
I thought it was episode 1.
Oh my god, it is episode 1. And slight digression. I don't.
Weekly Song Podcast fan.
I don't go back to the earlier episodes. I can't stand hearing myself talk. But anyway, aside.
We tried it once. It wasn't fun.
Yeah.
So that's the verse sorted. Do that a couple of times. That eats up a few minutes.
not a good way to look at some of that. That'll leave up a few minutes.
I mean, it's a very mercenary attitude to take towards songwriting, but it's as valid as any other. Like, it's not that it's a bad section. I like it. I enjoy it. I think there's a good tune there.
Yeah.
But definitely. That does account for, because it's a relatively long section, it does account for a fair bit of time.
I got you.
So that takes the pressure off somewhat.
It's great.
And then the next section is an A suspended in the bass, going from part of an E chord down to A, part of an E chord down to B minor, part of an E chord down to C sharp minor, which just sounds like A, because I didn't include the G sharp in there, so it is pretty much just A again. sorry, C sharp minor. then to a B minor, to a D, to an A in two variations to try and emphasize different parts of the chord. That's the chorus. Again, that's nice and simple. It works. I think it doesn't work with the lyrics. I think melodically it works. I think it's a fun section. But I think the way the vocals constructed, the lyrics don't really suit that particular part of the song. This is where rewriting comes in. If you write this song before the Sunday, you have time to do. The only other melodic section in this one is the bridge, which just alternates between a D, an E, and an A. And you've got a little bit of a run up A, B, C sharp, A. to sort of punctuate that section. And that's it. That's the song. There's a fair few tricks I use in there a little bit, like suspending notes in the bass, or like rundowns and diminished chords, chords over other bass notes. But yeah, functionally, I think that works. I think that's quite a nice basis for a song there.
I was going to say, as well as it being a really good song in its own right, it's almost like a kind of like beginner's toolkit for how to write a song like Declan. There's so many of your tricks in this tool bag here, which is brilliant. Yes.
The only thing it needs now is like a sing-along section. In fact, I was playing it through and I realized, oh no, this sounds like another one of my songs I've written called Found. I just realized, oh no, there are too many tricks that are the same. And literally the only thing that's really different between them is that Found has a bit where I expect the audience to do things.
I see. Yeah, I mean, but there's nothing wrong with going with what works. I mean, the amount of times John Lennon used a minor four, or Freddie Mercury, you know, did... I can't think of exactly what he did, but there's some things he did a lot.
The song things. Yeah. Using one musical idea more than once is not a sin. It's just something to be aware of. Where this song falls flat slightly, I think, is the lyrics. They sort of came through like just mumbling the song, mumbling the melody just to try and, you know, get a shape of it. The bridge bit actually came first, which was something along the lines of, have you got what you wanted from this? Well, boy, you should have let me know, or something like that. It's just like, okay, that's somewhere to start. It's 8 o'clock on a Sunday. I don't have very long.
Yeah. Let's see how this works.
It's a depressingly common part of my songwriting process, that feeling. Thinking about that, that sort of implies you're talking to someone else who's like not taking something as seriously as you want them to. And the instant thing I thought of was like, okay, dating apps. People are terrible at communicating on dating apps. They have completely different expectations of what they want than what you want, which is understandable, so long as they let you know. And people are very bad at doing that, in my experience, myself included. So that kind of is the thesis of the song. Like,
right. Communicate
better, please.
So just to kind of get it straight in my head, like, you had the kind of general thing mumbling through of like, you know, if this is all you wanted, you know, why don't you let me know, sort of lyric. I'm probably paraphrasing that wrong. And then thinking, what's that about? And then thinking about the dating apps, and that expands what the lyrics can be about.
Expands is probably a strong choice of words, but it does define what I was then going to write about. So it's like, oh, I've written all these nice words and you're still not talking. Okay, cool. I can see there's a bit of a loggerhead here, or like, okay, I'm making a bit of an effort and you're not really making that much back. What are we doing here if that's the case? And this is where the chorus falls down.
Okay.
So I think the verses work fine. I think the bridge works fine. You probably need a bit of a wordier chorus to get to the nub of the matter.
Mm.
And what you have with this song is just like, come on, I'm over here. Please, can we have a chat? Please.
But, I mean, playing devil's advocate here, I suppose in a way, that's the perfect chorus. Because you're going, that is the whole crux of the thing. Everything in the verse comes to that crux of like, come on, like, I want a bit more from this. We know what's happening here. And just having that as the refrain, I think works great.
I would disagree, but I value your view. I think there's more to be said about the central thing than that. And because of the way I write, which is music and music and melody first, lyrics second, as a general rule of thumb, that kind of sometimes can force songs into shapes they don't necessarily want to go in.
I get that.
And I think this is one of those cases.
Yeah, I do get that. I mean, it happens with the music and lyrics together thing for me as well, where you just go, this is, because you only have so much time, and you go, I still haven't really said what I meant to say, I haven't or addressed it as well as I could have done. And you go, well, what else could I fit into that section? because I've only got, you know, 12 syllables to work with in the chorus. It's a bit of like a crossword puzzle. So I do get that. I do understand that.
It's a trick of economy is lyric writing, I think.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. So, I mean, like, say you were given another week, what would you do differently with that chorus? Or is it so baked in that it's like would be hard to change?
It's not that baked in. Like, this is one of the things of this being like a song of my tricks is that I know which ones will stand being taken out and replaced. You probably are going to still have something, if you were to rewrite it, you probably still have something that bases itself mainly around an A chord. It might not be that. It might have something where there's a bit more room for a melody line to say something a bit more, or I was going to say jump into a dynamic range, like a bit higher or something, but it's my voice and it's already getting quite near the top. That's not really a practical proposition. That's probably where thing number one that would change. Probably the chorus would come out, a new chorus would be written.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think it's difficult to go backwards sometimes, like once something's written. Sometimes easier.
It exists now. Even though I don't like it, it exists. Ugh.
It's weird what our brains do. Because you kind of go, well, it's set in stone now. It's not set in stone, but in our heads we go, well, that's the song now and it can't be changed. But I don't think I've ever gone back and rewritten the whole chorus. I've changed words, don't get me wrong, and I've added in sub chords and stuff like that, but I've never changed a whole, like, plonk, plonk, changed the whole chorus out.
No, I don't think I've ever gone quite that far myself, at least not when a song was still, at least not after a song has been written. It would be an interesting experiment to see what happens with that one, if I ever do anything with it. But in the, like you say, we've rewritten lyrics before. Like, there's a song on the Schnookums album, Glimpses, where I was really unhappy with one of the verses. So we sort of worked through that together to try and find like something a bit better. Also, you were going to be singing it, so I had to have something of your voice in there.
I really liked doing that. That was a really interesting experience because I'm the most open I've ever been to writing with other people now, and I class that, what we did with Glimpses, as that of just like we figured it out together in the same room. But I've always been resistant to that. But what I kind of learned from that type of experience is like you just come up with so many different things, and like sometimes you're like, oh, what should I put in that line? And then the other person's like, this, and it's like the obvious, like perfect idea, and two heads are better than one, I guess. Long way of saying that.
So, everybody, to write songs, what you need is someone else.
Yeah, I mean, I will say, like, just on the collaborative thing, like, I found that writing in the same room as someone from the very genesis of an idea has only worked a couple of times. Pick up the phone, you and I did on the Schnookums album again, being a good example of one.
Very spur of the moment, though.
And that was so collaborative. That was literally like passing the pen and paper back and forward and stuff. But usually I find it's collaborating, like once you've got a basic structure, works well. But anyway, that's a complete digression. But yeah.
It's worth thinking about, like provided you're happy to sort of collaboratively work with someone, that is something you can do. You can go to another songwriter and say, like, hey, I've got this song, I'm not sure if this works, have you got any better ideas? Like, can we make this better?
And a big part of that is letting go of your own ego. I think sometimes if you go, this is my baby, and somebody goes, why don't you change the bridge chords to this, you get really feisty. Not you, but one could get really feisty. I certainly have in the past. Whereas I think if you can let go of that, you can probably end up with a better song, if I'm honest, like just by letting your guard down.
And it's funny, like that reaction is there almost instantly, even if you think that section is like wrong or something.
Yes.
Like I've had it before where someone goes, well, why do you sing that word that way? Like, why do you sing that lyric? It's like, oh, it's the best thing that fits. It's the best way that I can phrase that. Well, why don't you sing that word instead? No, of course not. even though you're not happy, it's like, yeah, but I wrote that one.
Yeah, it's akin to like, you know, when you're having a discussion with someone that turns semi-argument, debate type of thing, and you kind of realize that what you're saying is bullshit, but you still are kind of defending it, and it's like yeah, well,
lock yourself in that corner now. Yeah. You can't let go.
Because it would be admitting defeat to go, I completely drop it, you're right. Like, it would just be, yeah, it's very difficult to do, but often with songwriting, the healthier thing to do, because you go, yeah, you are right. Because I think that's the thing. If it's for, rather than for you, if it's for the good of the song or the good of the piece of music, that's usually a higher thing to aim for, and there's less feelings attached to it.
Exactly, yeah. Like you mentioned before, you have to let go of ego, and you sort of have to be there on the understanding of, like, okay, we've got this piece of art to make, and we need to make it the best that we can. How do we do that?
Exactly. That is true. I mean, as far as talking about collaborations and getting all that kind of thing done, where do you see this song going? I mean, I know you said about the rewrite, but production-wise, all that stuff, what do you think?
I don't know. I've not actually given it much thought. I think this could have a beat behind it, not necessarily a full drum kit, but I think there is something there. Maybe something like a load of synths or something, like giving like a bit of a pulsing rhythm instead of that guitar, like take a little bit of the shuffle out of it. I'm not sure. Yeah, I'll have to have a think in a bit of an experiment.
I like it. It's a good idea. I mean, also, when in doubt, cello.
Cello there.
Hello. You know, you could do dum pa dum pa dum pa dum, I mean, as if that's how the song goes. Dum pa dum pa dum dum dum.
One five.
Yeah, it'd be funny if, like, we're talking about the thing of, like, someone else bringing ideas. Just like, draw me there. Come on, it's great. Just forget your ideas. Draw me there.
Yeah. I know. Why don't we turn it into a 12 bar blues? Like, as much as you should let go of your own ego, you should also recognize when ideas are good.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, that is the struggle, isn't it? It's like, you go like, I think I've got at least some good stuff in the song I'm bringing to the table, and if someone kind of like completely destroys it, it's like, that can be difficult. I've had that before.
Yeah, those sorts of collaborations don't tend to last very long.
I think it has to be a yes and type of thing, where it's like,
or if you object to something, you've got to give a good reason why.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so this is the section of the show where we talk about what we have been listening to and what it has how it's impacted us. It's called What Have You Been Listening To, Ian. The question is posed to Ian, who is never here. So Declan and I, we fill in.
We cover for him. Ian's had a hard time with it recently, so we don't like to bring it, but like we'll just go on in instead.
Yeah, exactly. We're coming. We're starting to resent it, honestly. But you know,
Ian can't help it. That's the thing.
So anyway, in his absence, Declan, what have you been listening to?
Kelly Rowland, Miss Kelly,
from Destiny's Child.
Yes, that's the album that's got work on it. Specifically the edit that everybody likes. Time Will Wait for No One, Local Natives.
Not one I've heard of. Do you like it?
I quite enjoyed it, yes. A friend of mine from HMV introduced me to them, and yeah, they're pleasant. I enjoy it. Garbage. Specifically Garbage version 2.0. It's an interesting sonic texture. I think there's a record in here that I would like, but I like the texture more than I like the songs.
Sometimes with albums like that, it just kind of inspires me, like, hey, I'm going to try that kind of drum machine sound rather than I love this song. Yeah.
Kaiser Chiefs, Stay Together. It's another Kaiser Chiefs album, although it is a more synthy Kaiser Chiefs album. So, mixed thoughts. Spider-Man, Across the Spider-Verse song track. I bought this for cheap, not realizing it was a song track rather than the soundtrack. The score has some wonderful moments, and the songs on here are good, but I was just expecting the score, and it is sort of songs that are sort of inspired by the film, but I enjoyed it.
Well, and I've now learned the term song track.
Well, You have now. We live in an enlightened world. Song tracks exist. Casablanca score.
Good score. Good film.
It is a good score, but it's prepared in the days where you would have snippets of the film over the dialogue, which to me defeats the point. But it did mean that I got to listen to like the gambling scene, like. I'm shocked to learn that gambling is going on here. You're winning, sir. Oh, thank you. Everybody out.
I think there is some sampling to be had there.
Ray, My 21st Century Blues. Quite enjoyed.
Those poor CDs for the people watching on YouTube.
Alison Russell, The Returner. Also enjoyed.
Oh, yeah. How was that?
That's going to be like the comment for a lot of these. I listened to a lot of music over this past week. I didn't take in the most about all of it. So we have this one here, which I've very recently learned is actually pronounced Rasheem Machine by Rasheem Murphy. I enjoyed. This is one I enjoy more as the album goes on. It's a bit of a slow one to start for me, but once you get into it, it's good.
Nice. Okay. I'll check that one out. Rasheem Machine.
The Rolling Stones, Some Girls. There are some. There they are.
Honestly, I never heard of that album before, which is probably sacrilege, but...
It's one of those ones that gets a reputation as being like one of their later good ones. It's got a bit more of slightly punky flavor, but also slightly the sounds that were around at that time. But it is very much still a Rolling Stones album. Like, if you've heard any 70s Rolling Stones album, you don't necessarily need to listen to this one.
Nice.
Paul McCartney, Standing Stone.
Never heard of that one either, and I thought I'd heard of all the McCartney albums.
This is a classical piece. So it's kind of... he was the sort of composer for it. It's very different to the pop stuff. I am going to say it's only for hardcore completionists. If you are interested in Paul McCartney, but you do not like classical music, he's not going to bring anything to the table here that you're going to suddenly enjoy.
That's a stark review.
I'm not saying it's bad. It's just like classical's one of those things where I'm not that knowledgeable. I don't have that appreciation for it. So that's just kind of my thing. Little Sims, No Thank You. Yes, Please.
Great album, isn't it? I really enjoyed that.
It's a very good album. I didn't get on with Simbi so much. But that one I did. And I don't know why. And when I work it out, I'll let you know. Seagirls, Homesick. I listened to the first Seagirls record when I was working at HMV. Kind of enjoyed it. Listened to this. Also kind of enjoyed it.
Nice.
Last of the CDs, Rolling Stones, Tattoo You. This is the one with Start Me Up on it, which is the only reason that I got it. And it's the only reason you should get it. It's not bad. It's just, again, it's another Rolling Stones album. And I'm happy that I got this one, but I'm happy that I got this one because I got it for relatively cheap. So
nice. So you've been on a little bit of a Rolling Stones kick recently then?
A little bit. More just filling in blanks in the collection whilst the CDs are cheap. The only other one to mention is Mysterine's Reeling, which is quite a good one from a couple of years ago. I like, and I know that you've seen them, Roger. Do you remember when we went to see Arctic Monkeys?
Oh, yeah, of course I do. I loved it. Yeah, brilliant.
Yes, this was a band that opened up for them. I enjoy.
I thought they were brilliant live. Yeah, really, really good band. I didn't realize they were as new as they were.
They only had their first album a couple of years ago, I think. But yeah, it was a favourite in H&B, and I ended up getting on CD, and I liked it. So now I have it on vinyl.
Nice. Again, good haul. Very nice. Yeah, CDs are such a good way to check out some music you wouldn't ordinarily go. I'm going to check out the whole album, but it's only like a pound or two, so why not?
Yeah. Yeah, if you're looking secondhand for a lot of places, there's a lot of good records that you can find, and I'm getting to the point now where it's difficult to find, like, oh my God, it's that record.
Yeah, I know what you mean. It's like some of them are just like, I'll give it a chance type of albums.
I didn't have particular plans for this 50p. Here we go.
Yes. Well, on my end, I thought what I'd do this time, as I haven't really been listening, I have listened to a couple of albums, but you're not going to know about them. No, it's just been a lot of repeating. So it would just be a lot of me going, I listened to Nearly Human by Todd Rundgren eight or nine more times this week, which is true. So I thought I'd go through a few of my single tracks I've added to my Spotify playlist and just say a few words about some of them. Okay, so the first one I want to talk about is called Answering Machine by Rupert Holmes. This is the guy who did If You Like Pina Coladas. You know that guy?
If you like pina coladas and getting caught in the rain.
Beautifully sung. Beautifully sung. That guy, he...
If you're not into yoga... Sorry.
Now he's got Sesame Street. A blog I follow called Ear Bites, which is really good, actually. They do a few different blog posts a week. Anyway, they posted about what's the best Rupert Holmes song that isn't Pina Coladas. And one of the contenders was Answering Machine. It's amazing. It's this kind of a late 70s song. But the song is framed in this way of like, it's this guy phoning up, you know, this unrequited love. And he can never get through. So the verses are him saying, I'll try to call her, I miss her, all this stuff. And the choruses kick in. And then there's like, leave your number at the beep. And then the chorus is just, I'm so sorry, you have just reached my answering machine. And that's the whole chorus. Like, and it's just sung to this really great, like, samba type of rhythm. It's really a cool song.
Sounds interesting. It's kind of giving me Tranquility Base and Hotel and Casino kind of vibes.
Oh, yeah?
Because that has a similar conceit where it's like someone rambling through the verses and then the chorus is like, hello, Mark speaking. Please tell me how I direct your call.
Yeah, it's very similar to that. I love that kind of thing where they take a... I don't know, like even Telephone Line by ELO is kind of like you take a phone call type of
thing. Telephone Line, what a song.
Isn't it? Just my favorite ELO song. I love it.
That's a song.
How are you?
I can't get on that
high. I've been waiting here for all the lonely, 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 lonely nights. That's what I'd say. Anyway.
Before we get done for copyright.
I'm just thinking the whole of Telephone Line. Also, let me think. Okay, Wouldn't You Like to Know Me by Paul Stanley of Kiss. Not a hell of a lot to say about this one, but this was that period where the four members of Kiss each did a solo album. And Paul Stanley's is, in my opinion, by far the best one. It's just this, you wouldn't have thought it would come from him, really, but this incredible power pop type of new wave, late 70s, amazing songwriting stuff. And Wouldn't You Like to Know Me is a really good first example of that.
I am not very familiar with Kiss. Which Kiss is he? Which of the Kiss is he?
Oh, he is the guitarist with the star on his eye.
Noted.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely worth checking out. And Kiss generally are quite worth checking out. They're one of those bands that aren't like everyone's cup of tea, but if you find some stuff you like, it's worth digging in because there's some really good, genuinely good songwriting in there.
I'm familiar with is Love Gun, really.
Oh yeah, yeah. They did a really great cover of Ardent's "God Gave Rock and Roll to You," which I like.
I'm familiar with the original, not familiar with the cover.
And then another one I've been listening to is Operator by Roger Joseph Manning Jr., which I recommended to you.
And I completely forgot about. I'm so sorry.
It's fine. To be fair, you have the largest, you know, playlist of music to get through of anybody I know. So no hard feelings at all, but it's great. He used to be in the band Jellyfish, which were an early 90s glam rock. Were very, you know, according to them, they were very influenced by Queen and late Beatles and all that sort of thing, and just very melodic rock music. But he's, again, it's another Telephone song. Basically, it's very similar, and I'm thinking about it. He's talking about how he's living in this lonely old house on the hill, and he's really lonely and everything, and he's just kind of needing someone to talk to. So he phones up the operator. And he goes, the whole thing is like, operator, give me someone to talk to because I'm, you know, I'm lonely in the worst way. And then each verse, you kind of get a bit more information about how he split up with his girlfriend and all this kind of thing. But musically, it's really cool as well. Like, you just get all these electric piano type of things, type of sound going on. Very melodic and very poppy, but just change, kind of like your song this week, changes chords at times you wouldn't expect and things like that, which I'm always a big fan of.
I must admit, I do quite like Jellyfish. You introduced me to the album that's, I think it's Spilt Milk, the one that's got Joining a Fan Club on it.
That's right.
For those of you who aren't familiar with them, they wrote the song Baby's Coming Back, which those of you of a certain age might think is by McFly. It's not. That's a cover.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah. In fact, there you could probably draw quite a lot of similarities between McFly and Jellyfish, which probably would put some people off, but not me.
If you look through my listening a couple of weeks ago.
Well, you're primed to listen to Roger Joseph Manning Jr. In fact, in a lot of ways, his solo records are kind of the bits of Jellyfish are like best refined. So worth checking out. Okay, one more, because I'm going on and on and on about this. Okay, People Are Toys to You by Joanna Sternberg. This is a really great artist. What's the album called? Their album is called I've Got Me from 2023. It's kind of difficult to put into words. Simple chords. She's got a very unique voice, and she sounds kind of like Daniel Johnston, if you're familiar.
I'm not really. I'm not familiar at all. I'll have to do my research.
Well, Daniel Johnston was made popular by Kurt Cobain when he wore the Hi, How Are You? Frog t-shirt of Daniel Johnston's album. And Daniel Johnston was like one of the first kind of DIY, home music makers. And he suffered from a lot of mental illness in his life. This is Daniel Johnston, by the way, not Joanna Sternberg. And Daniel Johnston would record tapes after tapes after tapes at home. And Kurt Cobain was hugely into him. And when Kurt Cobain wore this t-shirt in the 90s at some award ceremony, Daniel Johnston just absolutely blew up and became really famous. And Joanna Sternberg is sort of in that same lo-fi sort of vibe. Anyway, that's what I've been listening to this week.
Yeah, some interesting selection there. And as always, it's nice to have one person who can actually give some proper insight into what they've been listening to, as opposed to going, oh, I did this one. But yeah, I'll have to listen to some of those and check those out. Editing Declan, make a list of what he's just said.
Definitely. I mean, if you only choose one new music this week, choose Roger Joseph Manning Jr., Operator. That's a fantastic song.
Roger Heather's A Fool's Bet.
Okay, so that is the Ian section. We also have an email from regular emailer to the show, Ansley Hendricks. Ansley sent us a new song of hers that she's written called Intangible. And she says, "Hi, Roger and Declan. I'd love to share my new original song, Intangible, about letting go of fear and finding your purpose. Enjoy, Ansley Hendricks." Well, I think we will enjoy, because we've enjoyed the last couple of things that we've heard from Ansley. We're going to take a listen now to Intangible, and it goes a little something like this.
Thank you. unable to move against the wind, clinging to anything, reminding me to breathe again. I wish I could soar and float as so without weight, while time is still a tableau in this ballet, flying through clouds. Always intangible, unafraid anymore. I wish I could soar and float as though without weight, while time is still a tableau in this ballet, flying through clouds.
That was Intangible by the wonderful Ansley Hendricks. Thank you, Ansley, for sending that song in to us. Both really enjoyed that. And we were kind of saying it's almost got a kind of like Disney hero type of vibe to it. Really reflective. And yeah, I really like this.
Yeah, it kind of fits in with the lyrical sort of theme you mentioned of it being about like overcoming your fear and things like that. There's also some really nice piano work on this one. We were sort of spying the chords at the end. There was a nice sort of cheeky little rundown, which was fun to hear.
Definitely. And also there was something at the end as well, just before like those few last little what do they call it in a barbershop quartet? Well, my mind suddenly wants me to remember this word. They call it a tag at the end of a barbershop quartet where they throw in a few really cool chords. But just before that, you go, unafraid anymore. And rather than resolving to the major, she goes to the some kind of minor chord surrounding that. Very, very nice trick, that.
Yeah, talking of chords, there's a nice sort of run-up up to the chorus, like a couple of cool movements there. Like and quite a good vocal on this one, quite a nice powerful vocal, which again sort of fits for the purpose of the song. I quite enjoyed this one.
Absolutely. So for the people who want to hear Ansley's music, you can check her out at ansleyhendricks.bandcamp.com. I believe she's got a new EP coming out imminently. So definitely check out Ansley's music. And thank you again, Ansley, for sending that in. And that is about all we have for this week's episode of the Weekly Song Podcast.
It's been a jam-packed extravaganza for you.
Absolutely. So this is the last week of writing for the Weekly Song Podcast season 18, but we are coming back to you next week with an eighth episode for the season to round it off before we come back for season 19 in a couple of months' time. Next week we'll be talking about, how do we phrase it, Declan, our top five albums that changed our lives or something. Wasn't that, but
I thought it was about songwriting and things like that.
that's the one.
But I'm working at it from the angle of like songwriting that sort of like I either really appreciate or did rub off on me in some way. I've got a short list I'm working through.
Definitely. I think we're doing top five each. So it should be a really interesting thing. I'm interested to see what yours are. For me, not to spoil it too much, but I've had to go backwards quite a lot. It's not like what I've been listening to this year. It's like, oh, Cat Stevens or like really early Beatles albums I heard or something.
It's difficult trying to separate it from like, I really like this record. It's like, okay, but what do you like about the songwriting? How did it influence your own songwriting? I don't know.
It is quite a thinker. So that should be a fun episode. So join us next week on episode 168 for that one. Thank you for listening to this season. Thank you for checking out our songs. If you enjoyed them, thank you for enjoying them. That's pretty much all there is to say about that one. We're on Instagram if you want to follow us, at Weekly Song Podcast. We're on YouTube under the same handle. You can follow us on Facebook and yeah, if you're listening to this in audio and you haven't checked out the video episodes, they are on YouTube. Just search Weekly Song Podcast and all of them are up there from this season. Breathe. And you can email the show at weeklysongpodcast@gmail.com. Send in songs that you've written, send in comments, feedback, anything you want to say to us. We always love receiving emails. And also next season, we're going to be doing some challenges. We're going to be doing a challenge season. So it can be pretty much anything. We're coming up with various challenges and we're going to have, you know, write a song in this style or, you know, with this kind of like substitution or without doing this, without doing that. So if you have any suggestions for the song, song challenges we can do for season 19, then do email the show at weeklysongpodcast@gmail.com.
Although I would advise that if one of the challenges is write a song to be played by the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra, our budget doesn't quite stretch to that. So just keep that in mind.
This is true. This is true. No classical music. You know how much Declan hates it if you just listen to the So yeah, I mean, I've had enough flack about having a cello now, so don't tell him anymore. So yeah, definitely send in your suggestion for that. And Declan, where can people find you and your music on the internet?
Well, people can find me and my music on the internet by searching my name. Have you been paying attention? You should know what it is by now. Search Declan Kitchener. I have an album out at the moment, Apophy Will Get You Nowhere. That was released a couple of years ago. I also have a couple of EPs. Also, Roger and I have a joint project under the name Schnookums, Schnookums. So our album is called Attaboy. So search that one up if you want to hear some of that collaborative music that we were talking about earlier. And for Roger, where can people find your music?
Okay, my most recent album is called Racing Alone, and it came out in January, and it's out now on all streaming services. Highly recommend listening to that.
It's really good.
I've got a kind friend. But yeah, follow me on Instagram at Roger Heathers. There's a link in my bio to my Substack where I write a weekly blog on producing music. And I'll leave it at that. Yeah. Listen to my stuff. Listen to Schnookums. Listen to Declan's stuff. Keep listening to this podcast. You're listening to the podcast right now. I don't need to encourage you to do that.
Continue to listen to the podcast forever.
And yeah, we'll see you next time for our top five albums that influenced us as songwriters. Or something. We'll come up with a really snappy title. Don't worry.
We won't.
All right. Ta-ra.
Ta-ra.